Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me, as always, the Scarlet Speedster to my Crimson Comet, it's Dan. How are you doing this evening, Dan?
Well, I think I'm having a better day than you are after all the bullshit technical issues you've been experiencing. So it makes me long for the days where, like, you know, the only issues like us sounding like complete jackasses and like the tech work. Now it's just like we sound relatively smooth and well-informed, and we just like get fucked by technology at every turn. So I definitely sympathize for your plight today, and I'm not going to bother asking how you're doing because I already know.
Yeah, we've had this weird streak of one form or another of technology in some way affecting us. I mean, from the podcast we lost due to Skype to you having your trials and tribulations with the horrible CW app when you were trying to watch The Flash premiere. And now I don't know what's going on, but it's probably due to me making one too many tweaks to the file that I was uploading of our recently recorded podcast. But I discovered later in the day, due to other people checking, that most people, subscribers from like the afternoon on, have not been able to access our podcast. So I don't know what's going on with it. I contacted the website. It's been hours. They have not gotten back to me. If we don't have a solution by the time this podcast is over, we may just start from scratch, even though it's going to be annoying to, I know it'll be annoying to Dan and me, but whatever. We got to get the damn thing out because it's just, anyway,
This might be a sign that maybe our episode 77 should be just you and me doing a review of the Twilight Zone episode, A Thing About Machines. Maybe it's time for that. Because sometimes the machines win. You listen to that? Sometimes the machines win. So that's right. Let's get it out there.
I know it's different Twilight Zone episode, but I started thinking of the one with the slot machine that keeps saying isn't the guy's name.
Franklin. That's a better episode, to be honest. But yeah.
Yes.
The fever.
But anyway, getting away from that, wasn't really a rant. It was just more of a statement of fact. We should bring on the rest of our little crew here. So if you guys could step up to the mic and introduce yourselves, as always.
Hey, it's Nikki, and I got super excited by this week's episodes.
Good evening, it's Jason.
Hi, everybody. It's Kate again.
Welcome back, all y'all. Even though we just talked a couple days ago, it feels like it's been longer than that, so I've been looking forward to going over these relatively good episodes of Flash and Arrow.
Yeah, I'm guessing that to some extent or another, it was probably more excitement going into this week. Well, it's definitely on the Flash side. I mean, the Arrow premiere, I think I excited one last week. Although, I would agree that we can say right off the bat, they were both really good episodes for entirely different reasons, but I was definitely psyched after each one of them.
I thought the Arrow episode was weird, but that was just me.
What do you think was, well, I guess we'll just remind me to ask you about that later.
Okay.
Anyway, okay. Let's just start to move things along. if we're gonna start getting lulls this early in the podcast, it's a bad sign. So let's get right to the very first one, which is The Flash, the latest episode that we've been looking forward to. Some of us for a very long time was titled "Flash of Two Worlds," which. Longtime Flash fans also know that's the title of the famous story from the early 60s where the Barry Allen Flash from Earth 1 met the Golden Age Flash, Jay Garrick, from Earth 2. If that terminology doesn't make sense to anybody, which means they didn't read a blog I wrote a week or two ago, it'll become clear while we talk about this episode.
Definitely. Yeah, I think we've all been looking forward to this this episode in particular, probably even more so than we were looking forward to the premiere, just ever since we saw that helmet come flying out of the wormhole or whatever last year. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was so happy that that was not just the Easter egg of all Easter eggs, that was actually going to factor into the plot of the show.
Well, yeah, I remember when we discussed that, it was like we weren't actually sure that it was going to happen. I mean, it seemed like a good possibility, but we were definitely weren't super confident about it. So,
and even though I am getting ahead of myself, can I say one thing ahead of time? I was very glad, although I don't know if any of us ever said it when we talked about the season finale, but I was very glad that there was actually an explanation why only his helmet came through the wall.
You know, yes.
Which always struck me as strange, but for some reason I was so excited to see the helmet, I never really questioned it. But now yeah. I was like, oh, that's why.
Yeah, I enjoyed that part too. So.
So getting to the episode, I noticed right off the bat that we have yet another new voiceover beginning. Now they are referencing how in Barry defeating the man who had killed his mother, it's opened up his world to all new threats, and so he has to, you know, keep running to save everybody, whatever. But I just like that they kind of changed the mission statement for this season, because you kind of had to.
Yeah, he didn't have to save his father anymore.
Right. Yeah, yeah, we're never going to hear from him again. So we pick up where... Wow, what was that? We pick up where the last episode left off. I thought church was starting somewhere. With Jay Garrick meeting the team. Now, of course, they don't trust him. You know, and the fact that he says all their names really doesn't help him any. It just makes them that much more freaked out by him. So he starts to try to explain himself and tells them about how that singularity created a breach, a portal between their worlds, what he calls a parallel Earth. They wonder, how does he know all this? Because on his world, he was the Flash. And so that's the big bum, bum, bum moment, you know, which any Flash fan already knew, but it was still kind of cool to see it said out loud. So then he gets to actually telling us what happened on his Earth when this breach happened. So we do get to see Jay Garrick, a.k.a. The Flash, in action. Before we even get into describing this, can I tell you how happy it made me to see an actual live-action Jay Garrick running, you know, and in action and fighting somebody, something I never thought I would ever see in my lifetime?
One of it those amazing... great nerd moments that it really is, you just never expect to see that happen. And looked so good doing it. Not like terrible. It looked really great.
The look they had for it was just, you know, awesome. I mean, obviously it wasn't their own, like, whatever, but the fact that they just, like, kept it with, like, the pretty much the look that it's supposed to have, and, you know, don't need to get too far ahead of myself here, but...
And you're right. It's definitely a nerdgasm moment. You know, I mean, at least old school comic book nerdgasm moment kind of thing. And I feel like I don't know if maybe they got a little bit more money to play with this season because of how successful they were, or they're just upping their game in general, which could also be the case. But the effects look spot on, from everything from the cityscape to the Flash, or to the guy he's fighting, which we finally also see in action. We see Zoom, who he describes as an evil speedster with the face of death. I really liked this incarnation of Zoom. I do not want to get too overly comic booky technical here, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask either Cade or Jason, did he remind you, I know we all know about, you know, Zoom and Hunter Zom and all that stuff, but did he remind you of another Flash bad guy in more recent years?
The Black Racer,
the Black Flash.
Black Flash, as he's called. He has numerous names: Black Flash, Black Racer, Death. Yeah, that's when I saw him, I immediately was like, oh, that's who that is.
Right.
Well, so, that's who he looks like. I don't know. I can't say now that's who it is, but.
Right. Well, they're calling him Zoom, so they've kind of established who.
Yeah, they.
But they seem to be, without getting too mired in this, it seems like they're taking aspects of a couple different types of Flash villains and maybe making Zoom almost an amalgam of them, because there were these even darker, creepier versions of evil Flash villains, as you guys all just name checked. But that's all I think we really need to go into them.
Whenever you guys feel like going to that kind of stuff, I mean, I personally enjoy hearing that. I mean, I've you know, obviously I read, you know, a million times more Marvel than I do DC, but I've enjoyed reading the DC stuff over the last 10 or so years that I have read. And since I don't have access to it, I do enjoy hearing, you know, that kind of information, just because it, you know, fills in a little bit of, you know, gaps that I have. And, you know, I just like it. So whenever you guys feel like going towards that kind of stuff, I definitely appreciate it.
Oh, that's cool. I think it's something I want as kind of like piecemeal for when I think it's actually necessary. Since this is just something, he just looks like someone, I don't think it's as necessary as if as someone, something like more intrinsic to the plot of the show, if that makes any sense.
Right, yeah. It's not, you're not going to be like telling me like exactly what Sand Demon's like origin story was in like 1957 or whatever, that kind of like, you know, malarkey. That's not super interesting, but stuff like this.
As a matter of fact, I do have that planned. No, just kidding. The invention of sand was in. Okay.
I know exactly one fact about Sand Demon, and that's it.
So in this scene, we are watching this flashback story of Jay fighting Zoom. And what's really important about this scene, well, there's a lot of things important about this scene. Well, number one, Zoom is winning. He's about to kill him. You know, he's killing him, I think, up on a rooftop. Jay's helmet goes flying off. And then the singularity happens. And
was Zoom killing him with like with his like vibrating hand thing? Was that what he was doing?
Yeah, I think he was playing reverse flash by shoving his... Yeah, the vibrating hand through the heart thing.
All right.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well. So then the singularity happens, and first Jay's helmet goes fluttering up right into it, hence an explanation for that. Although a lot of fans might have said for many years, how does Jay Garrick's helmet actually stay on? But, you know,
I did wonder that when he put it on him. It's like, how the hell? But I just thought it was probably heavy.
I like to think it's kind of like a speed, friction, centrifugal force kind of bullshit reason that no one thought of back in 1940. So. But right after his helmet, Jay himself gets sucked into that bizarro black hole into another universe. And he ends up on their Earth. We don't actually see that now. It's back to him just telling us about that. Because when he ended up on their Earth, one little unexpected side effect was he lost his speed powers. Which means, as I think Joe is the first one to pick up on, he's been there for like the last 6 months. And I think Iris, also taking after her dad, being kind of astute, realized that he must have been following them around, and that's how he knows all their names and everything. So, but he continues, because they are still remaining more than a little skeptical of him. He talks about Al Rothstein from that we saw in the previous episode, being a doppelganger. I always love the word doppelganger. It takes me all the way back to Twin Peaks, of course. Who came through the portal and Zoom had sent him to kill the Flash. You know, which means there might be others. So that's why their world, and especially Barry, and even maybe his little team there, are in danger. So, like I said, they all seem to be, you know, different levels of skeptical. But Jay, you know, agrees to let them run as many tests on him as they need to try to prove his story. So I like to pause every once in a while just to get everyone's reaction to the scene and whatever, just so that way everyone can still remain involved in this. So this entire scene, this is basically our true introduction to Jay Garrick, both as a character. We get to see him in action. We get to see the way he talks, the kind of figure he's probably going to be here. Well, first, the folks who actually know him, and then the folks who've never heard of Jay Garrick, really. Were you impressed? Was this what you were kind of hoping to see? Was this kind of in line with your expectations? How did you like it?
I liked him a lot. I wasn't sure last week just because it was a small introduction, but actually getting to see, hearing him talk, he has a presence to him, which is great. You get the sense that he's embraced what he was. He was the Flash. He did everything he could as the Flash. So now in this position, he doesn't have his powers, but he still has that authority of a hero. And he's trying to convince them that, hey, I can't do it. I need you guys to do it with me. And that, I like it. We'll see how it goes, but I definitely like how he was ready to tell him everything he possibly could. He wasn't trying to hide anything from him. He told him everything he could, whether they believed it or not, it's a different story. But he was a straight shooter. He wasn't trying to sugarcoat it or anything. He was ready to let them know who he was so they could get to business.
Yeah, I bought in immediately too. I thought that they made what could have been the goofiest part about his outfit, the helmet. They really made it work, especially in the running sequences. You know, I bought it. I'm looking forward to seeing more of him this year, and I hope he gets his powers sooner rather than later. Because I feel like that's a story beat that's been beat to death by other shows.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I was definitely impressed with him. You know, like they were saying, he has this presence that, you know, he wants to work with the others, just even though he doesn't have his powers, he's still going to do whatever he can to help. And he's fully embraced that essence of being a superhero.
Yeah, and I thought they cast him really well. I mean, it just, like, pretty much instantly, I'm just like, oh, this is Jay Garrick. I mean, he didn't really have to stop and think about just like, you know, oh, who's this guy? I haven't seen him before, whatever. Just like, I'm just like, oh, this is Jay Garrick. And I just like the maturity of the character. I mean, he's like, he said he had only been like a, you know, a Flash type person for 2 years or so, but he definitely, you know, it just seemed like he'd been carrying the weight a lot longer. So I just like that.
Yeah, and they made his origin story kind of similar to his comic origin story.
Yes, I was gonna. Yeah, that's true. No, I don't care. Anyway,
the War of the Americas thing that he referred to. What I mean, can you tell me what that is briefly? I mean, is it just like North America fighting South America and some other planet, or what exactly?
That is something show specific.
Oh, yeah, that's one of the many things they've created for the show. That's got no comic origin as far as I know. That's something I want to get. That's going to be part of a somewhat larger conversation I think we're going to have much later about this and about this whole plot for the season. So there's things that I find intriguing and although a bit confusing, but we'll get to that. For myself, as far as my reaction to him, since I didn't get a chance to say it, what was funny is like I was watching – I watched about almost 2 seasons worth of Masters of Sex about a month or two ago, because he appears on that show. He's one of the doctors on the show, and you know, and for the ladies, if you like Jay Garrick, if you want to see his naked ass a bunch of times, go check out Masters of Sex. It's impressive. I will confess that outside of his general physique, I was a little unsure whether I pictured him being Jay Garrick when I was watching him on that show, because he's not – I always have Jay Garrick in my mind being a much older character, and that's maybe due to more recent years, but that's just the way I've got him in my mind. But seeing what they did just in this opening scene, I mean, outside of the fact that the special effects and seeing him in action look great, but the way he speaks, it's the way he's carrying himself – even the kind of leather jacket he's wearing and the way he says kid all the time to Barry, it gives him more of an older presence than he actually is. You know, because this guy, the actor, he's not that old, but he carries himself in a way where he's got a certain amount of maturity and, like you guys are saying, like a gravitas, like a true hero would. So that sold it for me really well. I really liked what they did there. It was a very retro feel to the character to begin with, even right up to that helmet. And I like that they had that in everything from the flashback to even the kind of clothing and style that the guy chooses. It has a certain throwback quality to it. You can imagine you'd probably like hanging out with Captain America or something.
Yeah. Definitely has a kind of like, you know, World War II-ish feel to him, where he's just going to be walking around just like, you know, calling everybody Pally and
hey, what do you know? What do you say?
Interesting. World War II, did you bring that up, since that's when he was created?
Right.
Yeah.
So, back to the show. We switched from there to, you know, a random alleyway or a street corner or whatever the heck it was. We see someone falling through one of these portals. On the ground, the person's all bewildered. And then we have Zoom standing over him. And we get that really cool Tony Todd voice, which that might be my favorite bit of casting in this series so far, just getting to hear Tony Todd as a villain. You don't get a much better voice than that, other than maybe like Reggie Cathy or someone like that. He's just I want as much Zoom as possible, just so I want to hear as much Tony Todd as possible, quite frankly.
And there's an episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine that's like one of the like best like episodes like of all of it, and it's just completely amazing. And he does like the voiceover for pretty much the entire episode, because he plays like an adult version of one of the characters, and it's just like just perfect. I mean, it just adds so much to like an already great thing. So yeah, anytime I can hear him, it's just great.
Excellent. And this little brief moment, he's basically telling this guy, and we don't know who he is yet, tells him that if he wants to go home, all he has to do is kill the Flash. Now, I will confess, in this moment, I started wondering, wait, is he talking about Barry Allen? Or is he still talking about Jay Garrick? Because that's the guy he's always wanted to kill. You know, maybe everyone's confused, and we all think he means one Flash, but he actually means the other Flash. Or maybe he means both Flashes, and the plural of Flash is Flash on Earth, too. I don't know. So we're back at Star Labs, and Caitlin and Jay. And that's when we get a little bit more exposition about Jay Garrick and his origins and such. And like you guys have already mentioned, we find that he's just been the Flash for 2 years. And as Jason pointed out, the brief origin he mentions is vaguely similar to the origins of the original 1940 comic book character. I think in the show he says that he was experimenting. Turns out he is a little bit of a chemist scientist type himself. He was trying to purify heavy water without the residual radiation from that. It's one of those sentences that no one will really understand if you really think about it, but we don't really care. In the original origin of the character, he inhaled the vapors from, I think it was hard water, I think, as opposed to, but maybe it's the same thing, I don't know.
It was hard water.
Hard water.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's water with like calcium in it.
It was the 40s, Dan. It was the 40s.
Well, they still called it heavy water back then, because that's what they used to like make the A-bomb.
But this is a kid's book, Dan.
I'm telling you what's in the goddamn word balloon in the goddamn comics. It's not questionable. It's what it's called. That's not kryptonite. That must be jade. No, it says it's kryptonite. Shut up. But of course, it's the combination of that, because he says there was like a flash of light. And so I don't know if maybe it was lightning as well, or something along those lines. But he was also in a coma, much like Barry. But when he woke up with speed powers. So I wonder if at some point in the future, we'll see that it was, again, a similar sort of accident overall. And maybe, you know, we'll get it. Maybe it is kind of speed force related. Who knows? Meanwhile, in the other room, Dr. Exposition and Explanation, Stein, decides he's going to explain the concept of the multiverse to all of us. So that's when we get the first actual voiced references to Earth 1 and Earth 2. And being a longtime comic book fan, I like the fact that he had a good reason why their Earth was Earth 1, because he's starting with their Earth. So we're on Earth 1, which makes perfect sense in the show. It just never made sense in the comic books. Now we can get into the thing I really wanted to question and wonder about. Because they start talking about the idea of doppelgangers, about, you know, how, you know, Barry might be the Flash on this planet, but he may only just be an electrician on the other planet, and so on and so forth. And there's a whole bunch of other gobbledygook, who cares? Here's my question. And this might be something only Cade and Jason might be able to respond to. I don't know, because some of it is a memory question. I don't recall the concept of doppelgangers being that big a thing with, at least between Earth 1 and Earth 2. Because while there were obviously, you know, there was a Clark Kent on both planets and a Lois Lane on both planets, but a lot of other people, I don't recall ever having a doppelganger. You know, I don't remember there being a Perry White on Earth 2 because they had there was a different editor and a different newspaper entirely. I don't remember this. I don't remember this concept, but there could be stories I've not read. So I figured I would ask you guys: have they done that before?
No, Earth 2 was really the thing about Earth 2 was it's not the same people. Besides those like few, you like Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman, Lois Lane. It was different characters completely. You had a different, you had Alan Scott instead of Hal Jordan. You had Jay Garrick instead of Wally and instead of Barry. It wasn't until you got to like the threes and the fours that you started seeing the same person in a different version of themselves.
Okay.
And that's not to say it didn't, but the story's never concentrated on that. It was the different people from that planet.
Okay.
Or Earth as it was.
See, that's what I thought. I thought they didn't start getting into literally having, you know, the same people duplicated until you get into other Earths. But Earth 1 and Earth 2 were decidedly different. Like on Earth 2, Jay Garrick is the Flash, and he's in Keystone City, not Central City. There is no Central City on Earth 2. Comic book one.
Correct.
Well, that kind of makes sense, too, like based on like the real world, too, because, I mean, like when they made, you know, these different universes in the comics, I mean, that was before like they came up with the many worlds theory of quantum mechanics, even though Martin Stein calls it the many different worlds theory, which is dumb because that's not what it's called. But, you know, that wasn't developed until after that. So that concept of all these parallel universes being created with, I mean, doppelgangers, whatever, it's just alternate versions of the same person, but that wasn't developed until after that. So that would make sense, like, you know, just for the general DC timeline. I mean, that concept just really wasn't there back then.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense as well. And I absolutely agree, because I don't think they started playing around with that concept until many years later. It still predates the TV show Fringe, which some people brought up when they saw this happening. Like, oh, they're ripping off Fringe. Like, No. They had this idea many, many, many years before there was a Fringe. And I love Fringe, but Fringe was not the first guys on the block with this concept. In fact, many people have done it, quite frankly.
Even Star Trek did it.
Yeah.
Star Trek.
And Twilight Zone, you know, it went back way, way back. So.
I guess I just found the reason why I had to mention it right off the bat is because I was like, wait a minute. There's never been a mention of a Barry Allen on the other Earth origin. Because if there had been, there would have been so many other stories I would have read over the years. That's just never happened. So I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss something, or if something got like retroactively done in the last few years that changed everything and I wasn't aware of it or something. Okay, so I feel better now. So back to that conversation, Joe West, you know, this is all, you know, he's barely able to understand time travel and breaches and whatever. He just wants to head back to the police station. And then Professor Stein makes a comment about, you know, we just need to put our heads together to come up with a solution. And then he gets a little pensive and he acknowledges, well, not literally, because those days are over now, referencing his time as Firestorm at Ronnie. But what's very interesting about this line, his phrasing about those days are over now, as far as him being a hero, a Firestorm, Jay Garrick has a line like that just a couple minutes ago with Caitlin, when he kind of references the fact his days of being a superhero are over since he doesn't have his speed powers anymore, which we all know is going to be proven to not be the case. He's still a superhero despite not having those powers. Caitlin does. I'm sorry. You want to say anything about that?
Oh, no. I was just going to say that's right. But I think Joe had the line of the night during that little exchange with Martin when he's like, do they pay bills?
That's a good line, but I'm going to have to disagree. The line of the night was in that same scene, but it's when Cisco looked at Joe and went, bless your heart. Just like, you poor sad man. How do you not understand? That was the best line of the night.
Yeah, and I feel like Martin Stein's diagram of the many Earths should be like required viewing to anybody that starts questioning about the multi-Earths. I was like, here, just look at that. That should explain it for you.
Yeah, what I liked about that, an incredibly convoluted and, you know, overbaked theory and thing that the DC had done, he was able to simplify into something that, you know, even Joe West should have been able to understand. So,
or Caitlin.
I am not on board with the Caitlin bashing. I'm just, but you guys can go ahead and do that. But you know, I don't know why I've become kind of more fond of her. I don't know, but
I like
her.
She's not being written as an idiot anymore. That's why you're on board with her now. So this season, she's rock solid this season. So
yeah, okay.
Both her and Iris.
Well, Iris is a fucking revelation this season so far. To me, that's the best thing outside of the Jay Garrick thing is they've made Iris a character I actually like seeing on screen and she's actually not wasting my time. Yeah. But back to poor, but not as dumb as we like to say she is, Caitlin. She comes in to let them know that, you know, his heart rate is very low, and he does have regenerative properties, which means he does have a little bit of something going on there. But there is no evidence of, like, the Speed Force in him. She does let them know she did run what would amount to be a lie detector test on him, and he passed. But Barry, he still remains skeptical because he's worried, you know, whether or not this guy is really a good guy or not. It's very clear to anyone that he's still very scarred by Wells and not likely to trust, you know, a new mentor slash father figure. Not to mention his own dad just fucking, you know, skipped town and left him. So,
5 minutes out of prison.
Yeah, they definitely don't skip any steps in the Barry not trusting Jay storyline here, because it was, I mean, it's understandable, but I thought the whole thing was a little bit heavy-handed. Like I said, I understand where he's coming from, but, you know, they really, I don't know, maybe I just don't like seeing Barry acting all moody like, you know, season like 2 and 3 Oliver Queen, but right. In a week. Weak and stuff like that. I'm not just bad-mouthing Oliver. I'm actually being serious for once in my fucking life. But, you know, for me, that whole thing came up as just like, okay, come on, get to the point. And
I would say I agree, but I don't mind it only because it gives Barry a different note to play. So he's not always just the one. But there is a certain point in the episode where, yeah, you're like, all right, come on already. And that's why we have people like Iris there to kind of like say that for us.
Thank God. And, you know, and part of it too is like, you know, Barry, I mean, they're obviously playing him off as being younger here just because they have to contrast him against Jay and stuff. So when he's just being all moody and distrusting, it just comes off a little bit whiny.
Yes.
So, and I just like, I don't want to see it like that, but he got over it. It's fine. It's over.
Yeah. I was like, oh, what's taking you so long? Stop being such a whiny little baby.
Yeah, just because you had to relive your mom's death in your arms just a few months ago, we're still going to beat up on you anyway. So,
I mean, let's be honest. He's been through a little bit, people. He can have some whiny moments here.
Yeah,
I know.
But here's the thing, to defend what they're saying, but presumably he's had 6 months worth of whiny moments. Maybe we can stop with the whiny.
Six months is a limit.
I can go back. So at the station, Joe is approached by Officer Patty, is it Spivot? Is that how we pronounce her name?
Spivot. Spivot.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to be calling her Patty.
Patty Tryhard.
Anyway, I'm just going to be calling her Patty the entire episode, just for simplicity's sake. Anyway, she's a new officer there, and she wants to join Joe's anti-metahuman task force, even though apparently there's no one left on this task force. I don't remember ever seeing this task force actually in action. Maybe it happened over those 6 months, perhaps. But she keeps trying to make the case to him that how she would be a good choice, but between Joe's last two partners dying... which I've forgotten about. It's like, which is the worst job, mayor of Star City or Joe West's partner? Because they both die, and they both die violently. And he's also skeptical about her inexperience. And I was going to give Joe the benefit of the doubt, since he never actually says it, that he wasn't purely being sexist here, that he just didn't trust her to be on the team because, you know, she's relatively young and inexperienced.
Plus, he was just distracted by his damn cell phone to pay much attention to her anyway.
Right. Because during this whole scene, both before and at the end of it, he's clearly getting some sort of calls or texts on his phone that are disturbing him, even though he's trying to ignore it. Oh, by the way, one little semi-geeky shout-out moment reference I caught here. When she's giving her quick little bio, she mentions that the college she went to was Hudson U. If I'm not mistaken, I believe Hudson U is where several other rather famous DC characters went to college. Isn't that where, like, basically Dick Grayson and Barbara Gordon went, if I'm not mistaken?
Dick Grayson did go to Hudson, yes.
Glad I remembered something. Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's also the like fake university that they use on Law and Order.
They probably ripped it off from Batman.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Well,
because that would have existed first.
Well, yeah, it goes back to like the 70s, I think. So then we switch to Barry, and they're locking Jay up in the Cortex. I guess he's the only resident there now, since everyone else kind of split with that great plan they had back last season. But
okay, I have a question about that. Clearly he has no power, so why are they just locking up a person? What are they afraid he's going to do that they lock a powerless person in there?
I just presume they thought they just figured he was lying like Wells and like actually like had abilities.
Right. And Caitlin run the test before and he did have some abilities.
Well, also, and plus you don't know if he could be one guy who can get in touch with any number of other people, so you can't let him go out in the outside world. Might call up all those other rogues and say, hey, the coast is clear. They opened the padlock. They'd come in and trash the joint. Yeah. I thought that for a moment and then I actually explained it in the same moment in my head, so I was okay with it. Plus, you have to have him there because, you know, from a metaphoric or a writing standpoint, you have to have him kind of be the parallel for the way Barry spoke to Wells in that very same cell. So you kind of need to have that little yin and yang comparison happening there.
Right.
I think that's the first time when he's in there, we actually hear him referring to Barry as kid, I think. I'm not sure. Or maybe that's the first time I noticed it, and I wrote, I love that he calls him kid. And he's also, give Jay credit, he's very understanding, at least initially. Why?
I will say, he was like, okay, I'll do it.
But at the same time, he does point out that, you know, if Zoom is after Barry, he's going to need all the help imaginable. You know, but, you know, the fact that, you know, Jay has no speed powers, other than maybe some advice, you know, from the guy who was practically almost killed by Zoom, which, you know, just before he showed up there. In that moment, I'm like, how much help are you really going to be at this point? I know he will be, but in the moment, I was questioning it a little bit. But, Barry then finds out there's a fire somewhere and he takes off. So that was our first act of the episode. And, you know, it kind of energized me for the episode to see, you know, where we were going with everything. And when we come back, you know, Barry puts out the fire and then he gets punched by a big sandy fist. And this is when we're truly introduced to the sand demon, which basically it's a guy who has powers like the Sandman from Marvel Comics, you know, for Spider-Man fans out there. Essentially kind of pretty much like that.
I was kind of disappointed that they didn't defeat him by just sucking him up in a giant vacuum, but it worked out okay.
So a little bit later on, and when he's in CSI mode, Barry tells Joe, you know, all about it, and clearly that it's arson at the fire, and that's when he gets to meet Patty. And we find out that she's a really big fan, but she's a big fan of Barry. She's a fan of his forensic work and his reports. She's read all of them. You know, it's interesting to see someone who's excited about Barry as opposed to the Flash. And my first thought was, oh, new potential love interest thing happening here. You know, is this going to interfere with, are we going to see some friction between her and Iris at some point? Are we going to go down that road, CW? Are we? We probably will.
Of course.
But she does show them some evidence that she found, which further confirms that the arson was committed by a metahuman. And she also asked Barry for some advice on how to deal with Joe, but he doesn't have a clue because he doesn't know how to deal with any father figures, clearly. So, you know, it's pretty much on her to figure out how to deal with him. So I'll pause here. So we've met this new character who I think is going to be on the show for the rest of the season, the Patty person. What did you guys think of this person? I mean, did you find her believable or likable? Did you think she's going to take screen time away from better characters? For those of you who might know her from the comics, do you like the fact they brought her into this? Do you just not care?
I didn't mind the character. I thought the actress did a decent job, and I mean that kind of character could have ended up being really, really freaking annoying like right off the bat. But I wasn't really bothered by it, and I thought they by the end of the episode they did a surprising amount of fleshing her out right away, because normally shows drag their heels and that kind of stuff. But I bought into it. Good motivations and solid job. So. Actually, if you really think about all the stuff that happened in this episode, they did a lot for the character.
That was kind of my takeaway as well. And this was a character that I didn't care about going into the show. I'd heard this character was being added, like, I don't care. And when we first meet her in that first moment with Joe West, I was like, oh, okay, but don't really care that much. But throughout the rest of the episode, she has all these moments, and she actually figures into the plotting of the episode as well. I realized they just did a really good character introduction for her. We got a lot of information about her, but although it's exposition, it's necessary and it makes sense to be told in such a way. So I was surprised by how much I liked the character. I mean, I didn't love her, but I liked her enough that I didn't mind her, which is saying something, I think.
Yeah, she was a very bubbly personality.
Which works on this show.
Yeah. And this episode, when you really think about it, there's a lot of different stuff going on. So, it almost kind of feels like Mad Men-esque, where, like, when you really think about all the plot points that, like, got, like, knocked off there, it just, like, feels like, wow, they did that in, like, 43 minutes or whatever. So without feeling too busy. So for a show like this, and Flash is for the most part always been pretty good at like being able to tell really big stories and multiple different tacks at the same time, but they definitely pulled it off this week.
Dan just compared Flash to Mad Men. How about that?
I'm fine with that for now.
Yeah.
So when we come back, we see Jay Garrick working out on a treadmill. Of course, I and any Flash fan always enjoy seeing any Flash on a treadmill, and not for the reasons that Caitlin seems to be enjoying it. I love seeing these interactions between her and Iris. I was kind of getting a kick out of that. I was like, oh, something for the ladies.
I kind of thought they handled that kind of thing better than they did in the first season. Like, in the first season, it just came off as kind of, like, a little bit lame and darky. But here, it's just like, whatever. This kind of felt more, it felt more natural, and, they made him look, know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
It was definitely a nice moment. and I just want to say,
Vicky, you got to tell what's your favorite part of Jay Garrick? It's nice, nice abs. You got to tell us.
No, but I just want to say it's nice to see a little bit of objectification of men, because usually it's the women that are objectified.
I was having the same thought, even though I usually don't mind it, I never mind it, but I was. In a weird way, it kind of reminded me, although she didn't take it to that extreme, probably one of my favorite Marvel movie moments, which was improvised apparently, was that moment from the first Captain America movie when Peggy Carter kind of pokes Steve Rogers' pecs, kind of like an astonishment. That's one of the cutest moments, and apparently Hayley Atwell just kind of came up with that on the fly there. So,
yeah.
Kind of reminded me. So Cisco is looking at a sample of what, seems like sand. It's what they found at the crime scene. And then Jay walks in to explain what it really is, that they're these cells from the villain that have the appearance and characteristics of the sand and blah, 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 whatever. Sand demon. So what's really good about one of my favorite lines in the show happens now. And this is a guy saying it, which made it really interesting. Cisco asks Jay about that sweatshirt he's wearing. Is that Barry's? Because it looks a lot smaller on Jay. That was just so funny. And the reactions from everybody in the room. And I was like, oh, that made me laugh a lot. But at this point, and this is starting to feed into what we were saying about Barry being a little annoying, Jay is actually getting a little exasperated that Barry is refusing his help. He doesn't know what he has to do to convince him. He's been poked, he's been prodded, And then they get us with another unexpected joke. I even allowed a full body scan. And then they hired Michaela. I was just being thorough.
I will. That brings me to mind. I like how instead of a whole season of Caitlin just like being in the dumps about Ronnie, they're using Jay to kind of bring her out of whatever she was in. I like that. Whether that goes anywhere, it's a nice little thing that they're playing that story up there.
Yeah, I was very pleased about that as well, because I very much felt they could have went down that road. Although, if they had, it kind of would have negated what she said and what happened in the first episode. So, but I'm glad they made that choice, because that would have just made her a drag, and we don't need that to be the case on the show. But Barry is still kind of lashing out and back at Jay, and he kind of hits him with a nasty line, or, you know, if you were so good, you would have caught him already. And I was like, oh, ouch, wow. Kick a man while he's down and doesn't have speed powers anymore, why don't you? So then we switch to seeing Cisco and Professor Stein, and we get another one of Cisco's patented movie references. He, you know, refers to a beautiful mind, because Marty is busy writing all over a blackboard about, you know, wormholes and portals and breaches and so on and so forth. I made a decision that I wasn't even going to bother to try to transcribe or describe what the heck they're talking about. The long and the short of it is they're going to find some way to use satellite, you know, electrophotography to figure out exactly where the breach is. So moments a little later, Cisco is trying to check out that sample of sand under the microscope. And then he has another one of those vibe vision moments. And it appears that he's watching that confrontation earlier between the Flash and the Sand Demon. But this leaves Cisco, he's frightened, he's in pain, you know, he's wondering what's happening to him. I was kind of yelling at the TV, why don't you just tell somebody about it? Thankfully, by the time the episode's over, he does. But I was starting to get angry, like, come on, just tell somebody, come on.
But don't tell anybody else.
Can't you follow the lead of Jay Garrick, who is open and honest? No secret. So far. But later we see Joe is following the suspect, Eddie Slick, which is the guy who is supposedly the Sand Demon. But you don't know, is this the Earth 1 version or is this the Earth 2 version? He's pursuing him. Guy runs, but when Joe turns a corner and around the car, Patty has her gun trained on the guy on the ground, and she says, well, now can I be in your task force? We cut to commercial before we can hear Joe say, no. We come back, and this Eddie Slick character, he's being questioned by Joe. We all know how this is going to go at this point. I think we all knew while we were watching, yeah, this is the Earth 1 version, so he's not the metahuman, so let's just get on with it. And they drop another DC comic prison reference, because it turns out he was in Blackgate Prison, which they have referenced before on the show as well. But that's, he was in that Blackgate Prison at the time of the particle accelerator accident, which means he wouldn't have been subject to the big metahuman effect thing. Although part of me wants to say, really? So all the characters on Earth 1, the only people who have powers were affected by the particle accelerator. They're never going to have anyone who wasn't from that, but, you know, whatever.
And that's dumb anyway, because the particle accelerator is, like, moving stuff, like, you know, near the speed of light. So those particles could go, like, all over the planet in, like, you know, 1/8 of a second.
Exactly. Dear Andrew Crichton.
it begs an interesting question once you get to the end of this episode that, yes, you know, I'll ask later.
Okay, ooh. It's like a flash forward there. Something's going to happen.
Oh, hey, Kate, I want to know what your one fact about Sand Demon is, by the way. I just
okay, it's just a terrible aside. In the comics, he was a Martin Stein lookalike. Yep, that was the one Sand Demon fact I have for you.
That's a great fact, though.
It does kind of help with this, since we have Martin Stein on the show. But yeah, he was a Martin Stein lookalike.
They could have made him a Martin Stein doppelganger, and they dropped the ball. They dropped the ball.
Well, they can't have Victor Garber playing like two characters on this show and playing somebody on Legends of Tomorrow. So it's too much work for him.
I see.
Plus, he just got married. Did you guys see he just got married like last week or something? The actor?
I think I did hear that. I thought it was longer ago, but yeah, I do think I heard that he got married.
He got married to some dude with like the most amazing beard I've ever seen. Just like, just a perfect beard. So congratulations. Good job, Victor Garber. Hope you enjoy the podcast.
I'm glad that he married a guy with a beard, and it also means he doesn't have to marry a beard. So good for you, Victor Garber. Excellent. So, so meanwhile, Barry's kind of impressed with how Patty helped take down this crook, you know, which was really just, you know, a cop doing her job. There wasn't really anything that special about it. But this was the moment that made me really like this Patty character, because she and Barry bond over a Monty Python and the Holy Grail reference. You know, Cisco is nowhere to be seen. We get a Monty Python and the Holy Grail reference. I thought that was pretty awesome. So I was very happy to hear that. Back at Star Labs, hey, guess what we see on the TV screens? We see Green Arrow giving that horribly voice modulated speech about how to help Kansas City. And, you know, I think Cisco comes in, he has to be cute by saying, I hate it when they put a color in their name. Of course, I want to say, well, then when you made him the suit, why'd you make it green? But I kind of want Cisco to say, man, I really screwed up the voice thing, didn't I? I really need to fix that. But again, we get to another scene, and this is where I think it was starting to wear on us, of Barry being ridiculously skeptical while everyone else is listening to Jay's story. And I was like, okay, yeah, we get it. It's hard for you to trust now. But, dude, it's Jay Garrick. Come on. At a certain point, I didn't even care that, emotions aside, Barry's actually making some decent points here, you know, as far as, you know, lacking proof. Although, on the other hand, I think the fact that we already had an Al Rothstein doppelganger, and apparently this Eddie Slick guy's a doppelganger too, that should kind of tell you there's a lot more credence to his story than you seem to be giving him credit for. But instead, Barry just wants to be a dick. So Iris decides she's going to clear the room. You know, she's taking charge because she wants to know what's happened to the Barry Allen that she's known all her life. You know, her best friend. You know, the guy who was creepily had the hots for her even though he was in the next room like her whole life, whatever. But she pretty much answered it herself that Jay reminds him of Harrison Wells, duh. And that's why he can't bring himself to trust Jay Garrick. But she points out, you know, it's not just Jay. He's not trusting the judgment of all the people around him. And she's pointing out that, you know, these people, they believe in him and they're going to follow his lead. But if they start to think that he doesn't believe in them, it won't be long before they don't believe in him either. And I started getting, my head started kind of swimming at a certain point. It's like, okay, is everybody not believing in everybody? And yeah, okay, I get it, whatever, let's move on. I still, even though I thought it maybe had one line too many in it, I still liked Iris kind of, I liked her inspiring him a little bit here more than she did in that episode last season, which seemed a bit much to me. Do you guys remember what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember going that it was a little bit cheesier that moment last season.
Well, I'll tell you, like if this scene was like begin with her like making everybody leave. If that had happened like the first half of last season, I just would have been like dreading like the schlock that was going to be coming our way. But here it was just completely different because somehow they've managed to make the character just like, you know, competent now instead of like annoying. So I knew this is gonna be some good shit here.
I would have resorted to what certain podcast listeners do and put it on double speed just to get through it faster.
Oh, no.
So
I'm just glad that she gave him a talking to because he really needed it.
And you know what else it's nice about it? It came from someone who's not a father figure for him.
Yes.
Because it's always like for Barry throughout the first season, it's always the father figure who has to talk him down, talk him into you, usually Joe, but you can go through the list. Everyone from Joe to Wells, even Oliver Queen, you know, they all have these moments like that with him. It was nice that it was Iris, again, maturing as a character or writers knowing how to write her finally, stepping up to the plate and you know, doing something good here.
And I'll tell you, I definitely, like, I mean, you guys on the podcast are, like, half of my male friends. Like, most of my friends tend to be, like, female, whatever. Obviously, the other word, not male.
Yeah, but, female whatevers?
Yeah. But anyway, most of my friends tend to be, like, you know, competent, like, not annoying, like, actual, like, you know, females, just, like, real people. So that when I see characters on TV shows that are just, like, you know, stupidly badly written, annoying, like, hot messes, it's just like, oh, come on, just, like, it just doesn't feel right. So whenever I see, like, you know, chicks getting their own, like, just getting treated, like, properly and written well, I'd, like, really freaking appreciate it.
Excellent. I mean, women are real people, too.
Oh, amazing.
That's not 1953 anymore? What the shit?
I know, really.
Now I just want the reality show with starring Dan and a bunch of female whatevers. So I'm just...
Yeah. We're going to go to a Trump rally and get into some trouble.
They're going to put it on right after, like, the RuPaul show or something. So we go back to the police station, and Joe and Patty are escorting Eddie Slick out the door. Doesn't want to see him around again. But just as Joe and Patty are about to, you know, maybe have a little bit of a discussion about why she wants to be on the task force and why he doesn't want her, they spot Eddie Slick is walking right back towards him. But as we kind of guessed, it's the Sand Demon version, who promptly KOs Joe, and then we can presume, and then we find out later on for sure, that he takes Patty prisoner.
Yeah. What a coincidence that they happen to be wearing the same clothes.
Yeah, I was a little confused as to what was happening here. Like, if we were seeing two Eddie Slicks, or if it was just like the same one the whole time, and he was just like getting information the first time and then came back. I mean, I wasn't really clear on that, so I was wondering how you, fellow podcasters, took this scene, because I just wasn't quite sure.
Well, his hair's different. Like, Earth One Eddie Slick's hair is all like slicked back. The other one's hair is all frazzled, and they're actually wearing very different clothes. Oh. Earth One's like modern leather and stuff, and the other one's like khakis, like work type clothes.
Yeah, I wasn't.
Am I the only person who picked up on that?
I was too busy staring at Jay Garrick's like awesome biceps and shit, so I didn't have anything left for this Eddie Slick poser.
Well, fortunately, we have Cade Fashionista Edwards here to fill us in on
I've been called this before.
I know you have. I don't know that. Why would I know that?
Because it made a funny line. That's why.
Yeah. So, back to the show. Barry has to set aside his trust issues, finally, to have Jay Garrick actually have them catch this guy, the Sand Demon. So he gets a team together, and he tells them that they have to look for structures that promote humidity, you know, something like a greenhouse or a grow room, something like that. You know, especially now that marijuana is probably legal in Central City, I bet. Because his body, the Sand Demon's body, that is, will literally fall apart if he's dehydrated. He also then explains the way the Sand Demon, you know, operates, that he always attacks on two fronts. So he distracts, and then he takes advantage of that distraction to strike. So they kind of figure out how can they stop him, and he tells them he can stop them with lightning. Essentially, that Barry would have to harness and hurl the lightning that he creates himself. It would be discovering a new power. Gonna put myself on pause for a second. Cade/Jason, is this something that's been developed in Flash comics in recent years as a possible power? Because I've never heard of it. Or is this a TV show?
Not that I know of.
I don't recall it. I don't recall them ever having it before. Even when, like, Wally was starting to really get into the Speed Force and develop some newer powers because of it, I don't recall that being one of the ones he could do.
Okay.
Do you guys have any concern that, like, this lightning thing will be, like, something that they, like, is just going to be like, oh, why doesn't he just use that to, like, defeat, like, every enemy? Or, like, something they're just going to, like, you know, forget about and they just used it for one episode? I mean, do you guys have any worry that something like that's going to happen? Because, I mean, this seems like a pretty decent power to have, you know, energy discharge.
Yeah, I think it has a limited use, though.
I think it has a limited use because he can't just spontaneously do it. He has to, you know, he has to basically work up to it, like almost like a generator, and whiz around in order to do it. He can't just automatically do it. But I do believe they would probably use it again. You know what it makes me think of? It reminds me of how every once in a while in the comic books over the years, the DC's Captain Marvel, or Shazam, if you will, every once in a while he would do something where if he said his name, the lightning bolt striking would do something to help defeat a villain. It's not something he could do all the time because he ends up being a little kid as a result of it, but they would do it every once in a while. And I'm guessing with the Flash, maybe they might do this once or twice again if the moment calls for it. You know, you'd think he'd use it against like Grodd or something like that.
Yeah. Plus it's a potentially lethal solution.
I was going to say that I don't think they would use this very often because, you know, it is lightning and, you know, lightning has the potential to kill people, which is something that Barry doesn't really like to do.
I don't know. He seems to be pretty into it this season.
Well,
I was waiting to bring that up.
Yeah,
kind of a last resort.
I believe we're going to be saying that later on.
He's no Oliver.
Well, but apparently you don't want to be from Earth 2 and be around Barry. Not good. Because they, back to the scene, you know, obviously even the junior son, I'll make the joke that one of you might have thought of. Even Caitlin knows that the combination of heat and sand would turn into glass. So, you know, we're going to be getting like a cool effect later in this episode. Once they say that, it's like, okay, he's going to shatter. You know, that's what's going to happen. But Barry notices Joe pacing in the corridor. You know, he's again transfixed by his phone. Joe kind of lies to saying it's a, you know, it's a message from the captain, but it's kind of clear the way he's acting. That's not what it is. But he's blaming himself for what happened to Patty. I was kind of bothered by that because I'm like, wait, is everybody always going to be blaming themselves for what happens to other people on this show all the time? Because I've gotten enough of that on that other show we'll be talking about later over the years. I don't need them to be doing that with every character here as well.
Yeah, people in this universe are all about, you know, taking the responsibility for everything that happens in some like strange, like, hey, it's me. It's all about me sort of way. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So then we see that the sand demon has Patty tied up in his little lair, which looks kind of like a very wet and fetid grow room. You know, she's trying to get under his skin, that, you know, that he's nothing special. He just happened to be in the right place at the right time and got these powers. You get the sense at this moment, the way she's speaking to him, she definitely has some sort of personal connection with someone or something meta-human related. So they're already hinting at the story we're going to get later between her and Joe. She also recognizes that he's working on a concussive bomb, which we learned that it's not for the Flash. It's actually to kill her. But by showing that she can recognize what kind of bomb he's working on, gives us a bit more insight in the fact that, you know, she's smart and she can recognize things like that. She has, you know, she knows about things of this nature. Back at the lab, they've had no luck in finding the sand demon so far. You know, at least Caitlin Stein and Sisko haven't. Then Sisko gets the idea that he should try to force himself to have another one of those little vibey visions. And that time he actually sees the scene that we just saw between Patty and the sand demon. Now, Professor Stein, he comes in and he's wondering, you know, hey, what are you up to over there? And Sisko says he knows where the sand demon is hiding. How? I've got a hunch. And in this moment, I was like, dude, that's the guy you should be telling. Why don't you tell him? I mean, he does eventually tell him, but right there, I was like, well, tell him now. Tell him right now. But, you know, I obviously time's of the essence, so maybe that's why he doesn't tell him there. So we then find that Barry is training with Jay, you know, kind of like the way we saw him training with Wells in early season one. He's trying to teach him how to do that lightning trick. He doesn't seem to be having that much luck with it, but when Jay tells him that he believes in him, that's when Barry chooses to rattle off all these facts about the last person to help him like this, who would say stuff like that. And it's like, yeah. He goes through the whole thing about Wells here. But I do like that Jay, he's understanding, but he kind of puts a pin in it by saying, you know, tough break, kid, but I'm not him. I kind of like that kind of put an end to that whole little business there. At that point, Sisko and Stein burst in, and Sisko tells him that the sand demon has Patty at the abandoned Woodrow Grow House. Comic book reference Easter egg here for folks to know who don't know already. There's a well-known villain in the DC universe whose alias was Jason Woodrue, who was the Plant Master or the Floronic Man, depending what name he went by, what year it was, I guess. So they definitely were getting away with having a little bit of a cute little comic book reference by naming the grow room the Woodrue Grow Room. Here's the thing. I could see Cisco getting away with hypothesizing that he's at this specific grow house because they had already established he would be in a place like that. I'm not really sure why no one questions that he suddenly pops out, you know, and he might choose to distract the speedster with a concussion bomb. Why? That's such a random thing to come up with. Why does no one say that? Then they go, hey, that's a good idea. You're probably right about that. No. That's stupid. He might as well have said, he might have super glue all over the floor to make you stick to it. I don't know. It's more believable than that. Hey. Am I the only one who thought that was silly? Was that just me?
No, it's like a room full of geniuses and no one picks up that Cisco's like being Captain Specificity with this. It's not a hunch when you give specifics to things.
Exactly.
No matter how educated your hunch may be, that's not a hunch anymore.
Especially, what's especially interesting is Jay Garrick actually reacts to the whole concussion bomb thing. It's like, hey, you know, that could be it because the Sand Demon used one of those against me once. Of course, I do find it interesting that really the villain, that's what he chooses to use against you, a concussion bomb? That's a thing? I don't know. Whatever. It seemed a little silly, but I let it go because it was as unimportant as it gets, so who cares? Barry, he hits upon this idea of using Jay the distraction because it turns out the Sand Demon wouldn't know at this point that Jay Garrick has lost those speed powers of his. And he asks if he still has his suit with him. And something that we've been waiting for happens finally. When Jay says, well, I've got everything except my helmet. And that's when they all have that look on their face. And I think it's Cisco who says, was it a silver kettle helmet, like with gold wings? Yeah. And finally, that's what does it for Barry. That's what I think makes it all click for him. That's where I think the moment he realized, wait, he really has been telling the truth the whole time. Never mind the fact he should have picked up on this hours or days ago, but that's the moment.
Well, he still could have been a bad guy that lost his helmet, but you know, it made sense in the moment.
How would he? But the point is, there's no way he would know about that helmet. It would have been Barry's. Is what convinces Barry because they just.
I'm just saying he could have been a bad guy on the other side who just lost his helmet on the other side, and you know.
I suppose, although maybe someone remembered hearing. What's his name saying? Well, that means I got to get the hell out of here. Yeah, okay. I guess you just ruined the moment for me, so thanks. So anyway, back to the show. Caitlin, the moment of truth is Caitlin bringing out the helmet and Jay putting it on. And I love Barry. Barry says, you know, you could have just told us about the helmet from the beginning. You know, could have saved yourself some jail time there, dude. And that's when he mentions, and I love that they even chose to give us any origin information about the helmet. It never even occurred to me that they would give us any sort of an explanation for it. He tells us that it was his father's from the thing that Dan had mentioned earlier on, from the War of the Americas. What I loved about that, because I'd never heard of a War of the Americas, and I realized, oh, this is just a weird little tidbit about the history on Earth too, how things were different there. And it's starting to sound, I hate to say it, that's a little fringy, but that's fine because, again, there's any number of millions of stories with alternate timelines and alternate universes where, you know, like the one, that new TV show now that where it's about the, if what if the Axis had won, you know, World War II and stuff like that. So at the grow house, Jay distracts Sand Demon long enough for Patty to get away from that concussion bomb without getting killed. And at that moment, Sand Demon picks up on the fact that Jay doesn't have his speed powers anymore. The bomb goes off, which initially knocks Barry and Jay both for a loop. Meanwhile, Caitlin and Iris are watching this all on their little screen, and it's kind of funny, like how they seem to each be rooting for their different guys. Like, you know, Caitlin is, you know, worried about Jay, which makes sense because he doesn't have, you know, his powers anymore. Although he does still have those regenerative abilities, whatever. But anyway, so Sand Demon, I think, is pretty much going to put the kibosh on Jay, but he and Barry kind of share a nod, and Barry does his little whizzing around, like I mentioned earlier, picking up speed before hurling one of those self-manufactured lightning bolts, which I guess we could say it leads to a truly soul-shattering experience for Sand Demon, because he doesn't just turn to glass, he shatters. And presumably, unless they're this thing where they show them like sweeping up the glass and it reforms into a person, pretty much tells us, hey, you just killed another villain. What are these, Batman movies from the 90s or something? So, and at the end of the scene, something... Probably the coolest little homage of all comic book shows I've ever seen, when we have Patty coming to and she says, Flash. And we see both men respond and run jog over to her with a little weird slab of brick wall in between them, which makes no sense to be there. But we get a totally homage to the classic cover of Flash number 123, the issue that featured the story Flash of Two Worlds.
Yeah, that's something we've been looking forward to since the season started.
Yeah.
Did you put the GIF up?
Yeah, it was nicely done. I have a couple comments, and then I'll shut my mouth for a few minutes and let everybody else talk. But I really like the lightning bolt effect, like the way they like shot it and stuff. It just looked really, you know, just really cool. And even though, you know, I thought it was pretty sweet. And then I just have a minor criticism, but like, you know, this battle takes place in, you know, an abandoned like plant warehouse or whatever. If I had a dollar for like every time Cisco or Felicity like hacks into the security system for like some like abandoned like shithole somewhere and like uses it to do something, I mean, we would all be recording this podcast like in our own mansions on like $5 billion freaking microphones, because that happens like all the time.
Well, I thought about that, and I realized that Cisco and Felicity both took a course that was taught by this guy named Finch, which is all about, you know, how you can find surveillance cameras pretty much anywhere and everywhere and tap into them, you know, at a moment's notice. So.
Yeah, if there was a battle going on inside a dumpster, they'd be like, you know, live streaming it. So.
Well, I'm hoping that something happens where they go inside a person and that has to happen. So. You know, they have a colonoscopy camera in there or something. So, did anybody have anything else they wanted to say about this whole showdown scene before we get to the final act?
I want to go back to the War of the Americas comment, where it was just enough information to where you're like, that sounds interesting. I want to know more about it. And then they just moved on. Like, that's all you're going to get for now.
Yeah, perfectly handled.
Yeah, I will confess there was even a little part of me after the episode was over that made me think, I know the CW said, you know, with Legends of Tomorrow starting in next year, but they're going to, you know, put the brakes on any more DC/superhero-like shows because, you know, it's filling up their schedule. Part of me said, you know, I wouldn't mind an Earth 2 show.
I had the same thought.
You know, especially with – because every episode you learn new and wacky stuff about the city and the world – Like this War of America thing alone, what is that? Like you said, is it North America and South America? Is there another? Is it Central America? Well, what's going on there? So, I agree. That's doing a lot with a little, and that's a nice little piece of writing there, I thought. Okay, so when we come back for the final act, which was a topic of conversation for a few folks after this episode was over. We have Caitlin and Jay again, and she's still in admiration mode, pointing out how courageous he was. And he's still kind of, you know, although he's not whiny the way Barry is, there is a little bit of him that's kind of lamenting not having his speed powers anymore. And he's very self-effacing about it. He's not really trying to take credit for being the hero that he really is. Because, you know, it's about losing something that was such a big part of me felt. But she kind of links his power loss to her own loss of Ronnie, actually. But she points out that, you know, you learn that life doesn't have to be worse. It just has to be different. And that's how you're able to move on. Which, is pretty much what we saw from Caitlin in this entire episode. Clearly over Ronnie, the way she was kind of salivating over a Jay, shirtless Jay, for a good part of the show. So it is mentioned that, you know, she said that I wish we had trusted you sooner, which is definitely a running theme here between her and Barry as far as he's concerned. She leaves the two of them alone, and I love that they have this little conversation about, I hear they call you the Scarlet Speedster, and when he asks him, what do they call you? He's like, they call me the Crimson Comet. What is it with the alliterative nicknames? I love that he said that, because it's such a comic book thing. I mean, whether it be, I mean, Stan Lee did so much of that in the 60s, but every DC comic did it as well. Everybody had to be referred to in some sort of alliterative fashion. So I definitely got a kick out of that.
Yeah, I you know, pretty much every comic like stuff forever has always been doing that. So I definitely thought it was a funny joke.
So clearly it looks like somebody, Barry, is going to be having a new mentor, because they're talking about Zoom here and how he was obsessed with taking down Jay. And now it looks like he wants to do the same to Barry, because Zoom's motivation, which at first I was starting to thought was a little iffy, but then it makes more sense the further he talks about him. That he wants to be the best. He wants to be the only speedster there is. This collection of little sentences here, you realize that Zoom kind of represents all these different sins. You know, he's about pride. He's about vanity. He's about all those kind of things. That's what Zoom is, essentially, I guess. If that makes any sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
After that, we get a little scene with Joe and Patty. And we finally find out just why she does want to join the task force. Her dad was killed by Mark Martin, who was one of the Weather Wizard brothers. We find out her dad, you know, he worked in a shoe shop. You know, it was a cash business. So one day he went to the bank, and he had the misfortune of being there when the brothers were robbing the place, and Martin shot her dad in the face and, you know, killed him. And then she's mentioned, you know, a few months later, these two murderers got powers. Yeah. And I like the fact she isn't cursing fate or, you know, the cruel choices of God or whatever. She just wants to join a team to take down these evil metahumans like the Martins. Or, well, I guess there's only one of them now.
And the actress really sells it, too. I mean, you just totally feel it.
Yeah, and clearly she also convinces Joe, who makes it clear that, you know, she should get to work bright and early Monday morning to join the team, the team of two, but whatever. Okay, I'm fine with that. But after that, a woman shows up, and it's Joe's, I guess it's his estranged wife, which I feel is the first time we've actually heard anything about this wife of his. I didn't know if she was alive or dead or what.
I always thought she was dead, honestly.
Yeah, so did I.
She hasn't been mentioned until now.
So we find out this is who he's been getting calls from, and I guess this will be a story we'll see at least in at least one, if not more, episodes.
I'm definitely not. I'm worried. It doesn't seem like the kind of thing that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I don't want it to eat up too much time unless they really come up with some really great. The only thing that might work for that is I've been so pleased with Jesse L. Martin's performance on this show. That maybe it just gives him something new to do acting-wise, and maybe that could sell the scenes. But story-wise, I'm like, really? With everything else going on, we needed to throw this in the mix too? Yeah. So I agree. I'm a little iffy on it as well.
Yeah, they did something similar in Arrow, and like from what I saw of it, like I just didn't – none of it worked for me.
Well, I'm just hoping it doesn't become, let's not tell Iris about something over and over again. That's the first thing that popped in my head when I was like, oh, God, it's going to be let's hide something from Iris again. It's all this over again. Yeah. Hopefully it doesn't go that route. Hopefully we don't get that.
Your lips to God here. So back at the lab, we get Cisco and Stein again. And, you know, Stein makes it clear he knows something's going on. There's too many coincidences with these so-called hunches of his. And finally, thank God, Cisco tells him what's been happening. That he gets a – he's using the phrase vibe, but you know no normal person would actually use that to describe it. But they just keep using that word because that's the superhero character that he becomes in the comics, I kind of was getting a little annoyed at this point. Like, why are you saying vibe? It doesn't even make sense. But he tells him that he gets a vision of something that's already happened, and then it's gone. But the point is, he's frightened because Wells told him about this, that this was going to be his future, and that he actually gave him this power. But, you know, he equates Wells with, you know, evil, which just scares him all the more, that maybe this means bad things are going to happen with him, I guess, or something. But we cut away from that, and then we get another massive explanation about stuff going on from Professor Stein, where using that electrophotography, they were able to track down not just one breach between the two Earths. There are 52 different breaches between Earth 1 and Earth 2. I'll let one of you guys say what the comic book reference is here before we move on. Cade?
Yeah.
Or Jason?
Jason can go.
The reference is there's 52 separate Earths in the DC multiverse. And that's the big reference. Of course, there's been other references to 52 during the show as well.
Right.
Which was discussed last year.
Yes, we did.
On one of the podcasts. But this is like the most overt 52 since the TV channel.
Right. I think that's where I started calling you 52 Pickup or something based on one of those 52. Because you picked up on all the 52. By the way, I have always hated – well, I shouldn't say I've always. Since Cade reminded me about it a few hours ago, for the last 3 hours, I've hated the idea that DC had limited to 52 Earths. It's like, no, it should be infinite. That's what kind of makes it cool, not 52, but whatever. But about those breaches, the biggest one turns out to be inside Star Labs. And as Martin Stein is talking, he says, I don't know what that was. And as he's speaking, he says, and just beyond that breach, there's an entirely different... And then Martin Stein has a stroke.
He collapses.
I was like, what? I did not see that coming. No one warned me about this. Why is this happening? But that's what happens. And if this had been last week's episode, that's where the episode would have ended. But thank goodness they got back to one of my favorite devices on the show, where we get that little post-end title card scene, whatever you call it, that was sorely missing last week.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, this is what we see. It's a bright, shiny city. It's certainly not. It doesn't look like Central City, at least not a Central City that we're familiar with. We even see a huge monorail speeding by. So I started having that Simpson monorail song in my head.
Huh.
And then we see there's a tour guide who's showing, you know, mostly some schoolgirls and some other folks there around a busy and bustling Star Labs. And she's talking about how it was founded in 1991. And as you're watching the scene from her hairstyle, as well as the other adult women that you see in the background of the scene, and even like these model rocket ships that are behind her, it's an interesting kind of emerging of both the future and retro kind of stylings, which we've kind of seen in some other DC properties over the years, even going back to like the DC animated Batman series and a few other things. Or actually the 1990 Flash series kind of did that. It was, you know, modern, but it also had a lot of retro Art Deco kind of qualities as well. As she's talking about Star Labs, she mentioned Star Labs' motto being bringing us tomorrow's world today. Which, by the way, it's kind of funny that they chose that to be the motto. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
I know that line. I know that motto.
Because I just saw that as, isn't that the motto I just saw on the LexCorp viral video that was released like a week or two ago? So I don't know if they had these ideas independently of each other or what. It was a little strange. But she talks a little bit more about Star Labs, how they were pioneers in artificial intelligence, genetics, and metahumans. And that's when she gets cut off, or she cuts off herself, because she spots someone, you know, off camera. And she says, oh, we're in for a treat. And she wants to introduce everybody to the savior of Central City, Dr. Harrison Wells. And we see Tom Cavanaugh and his little specs and everything. And he's walking, not in a wheelchair. And he just says, hello, kids. Boom! That's the ending I wanted last week.
Oh, huge shocker.
Yeah. Did before we talk about Wells too much, do any of you think it would be cool? And I'm sure they're not doing this, but if like this world here, I'm assuming this is Earth 2 or whatever, what would you guys think would be cool if like this was a movie universe? And that's like why they have like a you know, Batman v Superman like Easter egg.
I don't want that movie universe anywhere near my TV shows.
Well, I mean, this is an alternate version. All they have to do is just, like, blow it up at the end of some season. And there you go.
It would be an interesting tie-in. I think some of the art styling could also be taken from the Golden Age graphic novel that they put out.
Oh, right. Or maybe this could be Jason's dream come true, and it's on this Earth that the 1990 Flash series took place for all we know.
That would be nice too. Then we can have another whole episode where like Barry doesn't trust his father because he's like a father figure that lost his powers and is another Flash somewhere. That'd be awesome.
They need a bigger suit.
So I will confess, when I was watching this episode, I was watching it very, 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 very late at night with very, very little sleep. And when I first saw that end scene, and maybe I was basing it more on my knowledge of the Flash in general, I actually first thought, oh, this is, you know, we're seeing, you know, Wells in the future. I thought there was like some sort of future world. It didn't occur to me until, you know, the next morning, and I was reading, you know, articles about it, and people reacted to it like, oh, I'm so stupid. That's Earth 2. The whole episode's been about Earth 2. Why wouldn't the ending be about Earth 2? I think I went online, and every comment I made like that, I went and removed. It's like no one's woken up yet. They don't need to see how stupid I am. They'll hear it.
You have to say that Wells looked out of place compared to everybody else.
Well, I don't know if I would go that far because the men weren't dressed in especially different outfits compared to the women. The women were, but I was looking at the way the guys were dressed and I didn't think that it was too out of it. But he's also, keep in mind, if he's supposed to be some sort of wacky pioneer, maybe he would be dressing or acting differently.
Yeah, he was dressed like Steve Jobs, and like all the women were dressed like wasps or something.
All right. And this is the question I had earlier. The impetus for my question I had earlier was that obviously this collider was working. So what happened to make metahumans appear on Earth 2?
Well,
that's my question.
That's a great question.
Random, you know, random things, just kind of like, you know, Jay Garrick's backstory kind of was just like a, you know, traditional accident.
That's what I'm going to go with until they tell us otherwise.
Until we find out.
It's going to be more like, well, the way comic books have always been, where people just become things from random weird stuff. But it would be funny if there was like some big mass accident on that planet as well that affected a lot of people. But part of me would actually find that annoying, but you know, we'll go with it. Yeah, we'll see what they do. But that's a great question I had not thought of.
I've got a couple questions for you guys. Do you think that they're going to spend a fair amount of time in this Earth, you know, since they've established, you know, Tom Cavanaugh's there and they're going to do some stuff? Do you think we'll see, you know, a lot of it this season or just, you know, bits and pieces? And do you guys think there's any chance that they're going to have like this Wells be like Zoom and like the, like, you know, almost the same bad guy again, which would be super lame in my opinion?
Vicky.
I think we might only just see bits and pieces of the Earth 2. And I don't think they would make him be Zoom. That would be, like you said, that'd be pretty lame.
And I could see, you know, I'm guessing filming this Earth 2 stuff, I mean, there would be more expensive to do. I mean, all the sets would have to just be all like crazy awesome, like cool airships and steampunk shit. But so, yeah.
I personally want a couple episodes in Earth 2 just for the visual difference. I think it'd be cool to look at. And what if this Wells is Eobard Thawne again?
That's it. That's where I was going to go.
Yeah. You think maybe we'll see like a Barry get stuck in Earth 2 for a couple episode arc kind of thing?
Yeah, that would be awesome.
That would be cool.
I immediately went the same thing. This Wells is the same as the other Wells, but it's a different Flash he was obsessed with.
Ooh, that's interesting. I like that.
I mean, because they've already laid groundwork that the same people exist. Since we're going with their version of Earth 1 and 2, the same people exist. Who's to say this one... Now, that's not to say this Eobard does things the same way the other one did, but it's not to say that it's not a possibility he did the same thing. He took Wells' identity.
Yes, I agree with that. I actually, that is where I'm going as well. I think... stop reading into the microphone. I think that's where they're going to go with this, because otherwise, then he's just regular Harrison Wells, unless they're going to make it like, well, that Harrison Wells is evil. And like, really? We're going to do like a mirror-mirror thing where he's a good guy on one planet, therefore he's evil on the other planet? That to me, that would seem a little silly to me.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wouldn't want.
Because if you're going to do that, then give him a goatee.
Exactly. He's missing his facial hair.
Or a scar.
Or an egg knife.
Or an eye patch.
Or a really colorful sash around his waist. No. But I do like the idea that he's actually that universe's version of Thawne, pulling the same kind of stuff, except he hasn't had the same event happen to him that happened to the Earth 1 version. So
would that character then, like, you know, have speed powers and be like, you know, Reverse Flash?
I would say yes. Okay. I think he'd be Reverse Flash.
And it's possible he has the powers, but if there's rumors of a speed demon like Zoom in that universe doing terrible things, he might very well want to hide that power for as long as he can.
Yeah.
He would not want to, because on Earth 1, it didn't matter. He could zoom around and do what he wanted. There was nothing against him. But if it's word, because... I don't know if it's implied Zoom's been around for a while, but if there's even a hint of something like that, he's too smart to play a game to cause himself to get trapped by that thing.
Yeah.
Right. There's something else I wanted to say. I just totally forgot.
While you think about it, I personally think I'd rather see this Wells be like good rather than bad, just so I get to see Kavanaugh like play the character differently instead of just seeing kind of the same thing again. But, I mean, I know one way is cliche and one way is maybe a little repetitive. So I don't know if there's a win in between the two there. But I wouldn't mind having, you know, seeing him be end up being good, or at the very least, like, you know, an uncomfortable ally against the greater enemy, which...
See, that's what I feel that's what's the more likely thing, that it'll be, you know, the friend of my enemy is my enemy, or friend, or however that old saying goes.
Right.
The reason why I kind of – part of me wants to agree with you about not wanting him to just do the same kind of thing again. But on the other hand, I was like, I don't know if I want just one more potential, you know, good guy, heroic figure to help a Flash around, like we've already – it seems like we already got a few of those.
Right.
I like just layering on the levels of potential menace. So I'm all for just screwing things up as much as possible. But
well, if Barry were to happen to go to Earth 2, would see that Harrison Wells there, automatic distrust.
Well, yeah. I think they're definitely going to build to Barry showing up on Earth 2. I think it would be bits and pieces before that. Anything extended would probably be more interior scenes where they wouldn't have to, you know, break their budget on more expensive exterior, you know, model work or CGI or whatever. But
yeah, like
definitely...
ducks, some golden ducks everywhere and make it look all cool. Yeah.
But I definitely think they're going to build to that, at least for one episode. And quite frankly, if they want the show to continue on for more than a few seasons, I'm assuming if they do that, then we may have Barry visiting Earth 2 from time to time, and vice versa, much like they did in the comics. So that's why I assume is what's going to happen on the show. You know, long-range plans, at least.
Anybody have anything else more to say about this episode of Flash before we start moving around?
No, I'm good.
Nope. I think I've said it all.
All right. Hey, guys, what do you think? We've been waiting for this episode for a while, and obviously we had a lot to say about it. Do you think, should we skip our usual Flash and Arrow together format, maybe just wrap this one up and then do another Arrow podcast so people have a more digestible podcast to listen to?
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Scott, you fine with that?
I am fine with that.
All right. So I guess you want to go through our usual
spiel,
rigor morale about how to show us that you love us, Internet?
If you love us, or at least, well, if you like us, then you should follow us on Twitter. And our Twitter account is at STVD Podcast. That's Serious TV Drama. That's what those letters stand for. STVD Podcast. Please follow us on Twitter. That's I send out the podcast that way. I make snarky comments about different things all the time. It's a good Twitter account to follow because we have like no freaking followers. Facebook, you can find us on Facebook. Join our page and join the conversations there. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast. Type in Serious TV Drama in the search box on Facebook. That should be enough to find us. The same goes for iTunes. If you want to find us on iTunes, and you can subscribe to us there as well, just type Serious TV Drama in that search box. You'll find our podcast that way. And if you like this podcast or if you've heard any of our other ones and you like those, it would be ever so appreciated if you could give us a rating and a review, preferably of the 5-star variety if you're feeling charitable. And I believe that's pretty much everything that we usually went through at the end of these things.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, thanks for joining us again, guys. It definitely, it's always fun to talk to you guys after a long day of work and eating, because I like to eat.
It's enjoyable. I do like doing these.
All right.
All right. Well, I'm just going to say good night, guys.
Good night.
Good night, Scott.
Good night,
Dan.
There we go again.
The monarch of motion, the sultan of speed, the wizard of whiz, oh yes indeed. Go from here to China in a no time flat, beat the speed of light and you can't beat that. The Flash,
the Flash,
meet the mighty Flash,
the Flash, the Flash,
in a fight he'll smash and crash, smash a whole gang of crooks or schnooks. Hey, he'll just clobber any kind of bad guy, thief or robber, the world's fastest. Yeah, man, the Flash,
the unbeatable Flash, the undefeatable Flash.
No one knows Barry Allen is his real name, works with the police, justice is his aim, wears a ring with the Flash's uniform in it when danger threatens.